This is a special edition of the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn, our technical director, Henry Frain, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. Well, in his first appearance before a joint session of the Illinois legislature, Governor Pat Quinn detailed his spending proposal for the coming fiscal year, as well as his call for tax and fee increases. In this portion of the program, we'll talk about the governor's budget proposal with a veteran State House observer. We'll get more reaction. And we'll ask you for your reaction and your questions. What questions do you have about where we are in the state of Illinois in terms of our finances? In the studio with me is former state lawmaker Rick Winkle. He is currently visiting senior fellow and adjunct professor in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. A Republican, he represented Champaign and Vermilion counties in the General Assembly for 12 years, serving terms in the House and the Senate. Joining us by phone is Democratic State Senator Mike Frericks of Champaign. He represents the 52nd Senate District, which covers most of Champaign and Vermilion counties. We may also speak later in the broadcast with State Representative Naomi Jacobson of Urbana. Also, listeners, I invite your questions and comments. What are your thoughts about Governor Quinn's spending proposal? What are your thoughts about the state's fiscal condition? Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Joining us now on the phone, Senator Mike Frericks of Champaign. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good afternoon, Celeste. Happy to be to join you.
Okay. And Rick Winkle with me here in the studio.
Hi, Senator. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. Different reception today, huh?
Night and day from last year. I don't think there was much applause last year. I don't think there was many people standing. But today, Governor Quinn had a great reception. There's an awful lot of skepticism out there, but I think a lot of people are looking forward to work with this man who spends a lot of time in Springfield, seems to be honest, seems to be committed about solving our state's problems.
So it seems at the moment, anyway, we've got good faith working for us here.
I think so. I think there's some skepticism out there. There are people who look at the size of the new revenue he's proposing increasing and are a bit reluctant. I think there are some of us who would like to see a little more details on about what cuts we have in state government first. I think there are like some more opportunities for some cuts out there. But I think an overall part of deficit reduction is going to be some combination of cuts to state services, to state government, as well as some revenue enhancements.
And Rick Winkle?
Well, Senator, I was most struck by the governor, just his style of approach. He came, sounded strong, very direct, very genuine, spoke from the heart. And Celeste hits it right on the head. It's an issue of good faith. I mean, if there was anything sorely lacking the last few years, it was the whole notion of mutual trust, of mutual respect, which necessarily, if you have those two factors, you can then go into how you get around problems and solving them through good faith negotiations. And so I took the reception today to mean that this could be a new era of trust and respect and negotiations.
I believe so. I've already seen far more meetings of the governor, the speaker, and the Senate president since Governor Quinn has taken office than I did in the first 2 years between Governor Blagojevich, President Jones, and Speaker Madigan.
And what about the other side of the aisle?
Well, I think there's some skepticism on the other side of the aisle about the extent of the increases, but I think there is at least acknowledgement that Governor Quinn is being upfront, honest, transparent about what he wants to do. You know, a couple of years ago I came in here and Governor Blagojevich talked about his gross receipts tax and tried to tell people this wasn't a tax increase on people.
Right.
And it's that kind of attitude that breeds mistrust. It's difficult to actually work with someone like that. At least Governor Quinn, I think the side of the aisle sees him as being honest. There may be some policy disagreements, but you can sit down and attempt to work through those with someone who is up front.
Okay, I've been hearing words like skepticism, need more detail, caution. This is a tricky thing to have for Quinn to get this through, to work with the legislature. Where do things go from here? Does he have any out-and-out support at this moment for his proposals?
Well, I got to think he does. Senator, you may disagree with me, but I think that he certainly has put Republicans on alert that, look, here's my plan. He walked right through it, wasn't bashful about it. It's a tax increase. We're cutting costs. We're dealing with we're coming up with a new two-tiered pension system. We're going to pay our bills on time. He laid it all out. Now, certainly in a 45-minute speech, I mean, he could have spoken, I suppose, for 3 hours and given us, gloms of detail, but I don't think that would have been appropriate today. I think he did what he had to do, and he put both sides of the aisle on notice. This is my agenda. This is what the Constitution requires me to do, and I'm doing it, and I'm doing it in a way that I really believe in. I don't think this is posturing. I don't think that he was laying on a budget that was made up or contrived or just going to be negotiated away. I think this was really what he believes in. That's what I took from this. And he puts the Republicans on notice that, hey, if you don't like it, tell us what you would do. Where do you cut? If you can just manage your way out of it, terrific. Show us how. And show us how you can do it without raising taxes. And so I think that because of the nature of Pat Quinn, he's going to be able to facilitate that kind of discussion and really force that issue and maybe have a better luck with attracting bipartisan support than, let's say, President Obama just experienced. And maybe he can do that here in Illinois. Mm.
What do you say we take some calls?
Okay.
Listener in Urbana on line one. Good afternoon. Line one?
Hello, yes.
Yeah.
I listened to the governor's speech today, and, in general, I've been heartened by his 60 days in office and the overall tone and direction that he's going. I have a lot of concern about the talk about pension reform. There's one reason why the pension system is in the precarious situation it is because year after year after year after year after year after year after year, the state legislature has not paid the money into the system that they were obligated to according to our employment contracts. But I think in order for real change to happen, we have to change the way the legislative process works. I'm a Democrat. I voted for both of our local senator and representative, but I am embarrassed that when you try to talk to them during the budget cycle, it's obvious that they are out of the loop. No backbenchers have any real authority. The personality of the Senate Majority Leader, the Speaker of the House, and the governor, they cut deals, and when it's announced, the Democrats fall in line and vote, hold their nose and vote for whatever comes up. I think we need to have an honest budgeting process with a committee with authority, emasculate the power of the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader, let the members come up with the budget, and then take responsibility for it. I am tired of talking to my representatives, and they shrug because there's reasons why they do what their leaders tell them to, because principal campaign finance money has come from the leaders to get them in. I think we have to have electoral funding reform to emasculate the power of the Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker of the House before we can ever have honest budgeting, no matter who the governor is.
Okay, well, thanks for the call. Okay. Let's
I'd be curious which one I shrugged about the budget process.
Well, I mean, there's no public comment. I've gone on websites during the budget cycle. There's no sort of, these are the things that are important to me that I'm going to fight for. The local newspaper, I don't know whether you try to do press releases.
Press releases are sent out. The local paper has shrunk their staff due to the declines in revenue for local newspapers, and I would say 80% of the press releases I send out don't get covered.
Well, why don't you offer, years ago they ran a regular column by the state representative, and if you're willing to do it for free, offer them a weekly column where you stake out a position on budget and other important legislation, and it covers column inches for them. I bet they would do it. I think the big thing is,
I would bet not, but I'll make that offer to them because I've offered in the past.
The big thing is, last summer's a case in point. After months and months of a personality fight with the big three, finally the word came down: we're going to pass this budget, which isn't balanced, and let the governor make the cuts. And then in October we get the cuts in the parks and all this other sort of garbage. And who's to blame? It's the governor. Well, no, it's not the governor's to blame. You guys didn't do your job, and you know the budget comes every year. There's no reason for you not to claim the power from the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader to say, we're going to have a budget committee, subcommittees, honest budgeting process, and do this right. There's no reason to have three personalities running our state government. That's not the Democratic way. That's not why we elect you.
Okay, well, I would say that the way the budget works is the governor puts out his budget first. And the way it's worked in the past before Governor Blagojevich, the governor starts with a framework, and the legislature then works with that budget to make changes that are hopefully ultimately good for the state of Illinois. Now, at that point, individual legislators, you hear an awful lot from the legislative leaders, the Senate president, the Speaker of the House, but if individual legislators are doing their job, they're communicating with those leaders and saying, here is what I need to see in this budget in order for me to vote for it. No individual legislator gets to craft the budget himself or herself and gets to make all those decisions, but if you do your job, you communicate to the Senate president that, you know, here are the things that I need to see, here's what I'd like to see to get my vote. Now, I am very heartened. You saw some senators last year upset with the way this process worked. I was one of them. And our Senate president resigned, decided he wasn't going to run for reelection. And we have a new Senate president, and there is a new day of openness in this process. We have appropriations hearings where the public is welcome to attend. And the other avenue for people who want to be part of this is to communicate with your representative and senator. And although I may not be the one on TV or the one getting in the newspaper, I can tell you I have a very good relationship with the Senate president, and I have communicated my concerns about the budget process and what I'd like to see in a final product.
And quite frankly, in fairness to the legislators, these last couple of years have been extraordinarily unique in the sense that we've had a governor, a chief executive, who would present a budget that was a take-it-or-leave-it proposition where there was no what I mentioned before, there was no respect for the process. There was no trust engendered. There was no negotiating with the governor. And it ended up in a bitter personal feud. And the caller, to that extent, is correct. But, you know, to lay that on the individual legislators, I think, is unfair, quite frankly. I think that, and I've been very impressed with Mike and his being, he's out there fighting for the university and the budget. I know you are, and I know you're speaking up, and I think it's made a difference in John Cullerton, the new Senate president, and his loosening up the rules. So the caller, to the extent that you want to see less power in the Speaker's office and the President's office, I agree. But I wouldn't come down quite so hard on our local legislators as you have.
Okay, I want to thank the listener for his call, and we're going to take another call now. In Champaign, a listener waiting for us on line two. Hi. Line two? Champaign. Line two.
Hello.
Hi there. Yeah, we got you now. Go ahead.
All right. I appreciated hearing Governor Quinn's emphasis on education. It's one of the cornerstones of our economy in the present and the future. But can I presume that given if this proposed increase in the income tax is passed, that that's pretty much going to kill the proposed tax swap for property taxes and income taxes? That's pretty much going to kill that dead for the foreseeable future?
I would say that if it were passed as is, that would be the case. Now, Senator Meeks has once again, in this legislative session, introduced Senate Bill 750, and is hoping that will be part of the negotiations during the budget process.
Okay. To my mind, it's one of the more effective ways of equalizing education money around the state that I've seen, and helps to balance it. But if that is off the table, what other mechanisms are out there in order to improve education spending and to help? I'm thinking particularly of, I grew up in Decatur, and towns like Rockford and Decatur, Danville, they get into this horrible situation where the quality of the public schools go down, so property taxes, the property values are depressed, the property taxes go down, and the schools deteriorate further, and Decatur has been stuck in that cycle for longer than I've been alive. So I wanted to hear about maybe other possibilities for improving education funding and distribution, and I'll hang up. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, I think in terms of improving education funding, this budget does that. It doesn't do it in a large extent, but at a time when most state agencies and departments are seeing dramatic cuts, or at least cuts, to see more money going towards education is a good sign for me. What I don't see here is reform in distribution throughout the state. And while I think this will increase the foundation level for students around the state, you're still going to see great disparities in funding between your richest and poorest school districts. And that's something that I would like to, that I think 750 begins to address, and the reason I'd like to see a part of the discussion on this budget.
Well, as Senator Furix knows, I certainly have been very sympathetic, having been a co-sponsor with Senator Meeks, and when he was Senator Duvalier was in the Senate with the very similar legislation. But frankly, I don't share your optimism. I think that the proposition of property tax relief in this kind of fiscal and economic environment is a very steep uphill battle. I'm glad to see that $170 million increase is being proposed in this budget, while others are looking at cuts. And so I think Senator Furix, you're right about that. But I don't think you're going to see a swap at the end of the day in this kind of environment. And so the caller, I think, may be right. This is probably something that's going to be delayed. I was certainly glad to see that there's $40 million in for higher ed. It's a positive signal that the governor does value higher education. Certainly, you know, we would hope for more, but in this environment, we're pretty pleased.
Okay, as Senator Furix only has a few more minutes, he can stay with us. We're going to go on.
I just sent a note to an assistant. I can probably stay here another 10 minutes.
Okay, wonderful. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign County on line 3. Good afternoon.
Hi. A tax swap in itself isn't progressive, particularly when we're still stuck with this, you know, single tier non-progressive income tax. I know that Senator Furix was talking about in the build-up to the possible constitutional convention of talking about changing the ratio of business, et cetera, and putting in a progressive. Now, I think what happened there, in my estimation, is the Chamber of Commerce and Business Forces said, you're going to try for that, where we're going to try for getting rid of the obligation to retirees and all sorts of other things, and it was pretty much a dead end. So, but given that with the limitations I like the idea of the $6,000
personal exemption.
Deduction, personal exemption, because that does remedy it in a bit. But it seems to me as long as we still don't have any way of collecting the corporate taxes. Now, I've argued with some analysts from the Public Policy Institute, and they suggest that, well, it would only be another $350 million, which is nothing to sneeze at. I'm not sure if I think those figures are accurate because of the amount of commerce that's going on that isn't taxed at all in the corporate level. I begrudge the previous governor for sort of surprising everybody with the gross receipts tax and not calling it a corporate fairness tax, unless there's a way to enforce corporate taxes. Now, I know everybody's going to say, well, this is an economy that can't handle anymore and the businesses will leave. Well, many of them can't, and it just seems to me it's a matter of fairness. Now, the point I started with is that the swap is, in and of itself is not a – if it does allow for money to be spread to the really destitute school districts, what is it, Mississippi and Alabama keep Illinois from being the least fair in equity and school spending? I would like for you to address anything that would remedy that situation of just the tax inequality, the tax inequity. Thanks.
Well, I was pushing to give the voters a choice whether we could have a progressive income tax in the state of Illinois. I was pushing for that last year before the election, was unsuccessful in getting it out of the Senate. There were too many people who thought that this would lead to a big tax increase or afraid to be used against them in an election, and it didn't pass. Now, Governor Quinn agrees with that principle, and under our state constitution, we can't have a progressive income tax structure or different progressive rates, but he's building in a level of progressivity here. So we talk about a 50% increase in the income tax rate, but with these personal exemptions increasing from $2,000 to $6,000, if this happens, you actually will see a progressive net overall rate. So someone, a family of four, making $24,000 a year would have a zero would effectively have a zero income tax, state income tax rate. Someone making a family of four making $50,000 a year pays a 4.5% rate, but only on half of their income. And so their effective rate would be somewhere around 2.25%. Even people at the upper levels of income would be paying a full 4.5% with the standard deductions. They'd be paying some small amount less than that. And so I applaud the governor for trying to work within the Constitution to build in some level of progressivity.
Okay. Rick Winkle, any comment?
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right. I mean, I think that's his point here with his proposal. That's why he's calling it a restructuring or reform of the tax system. You know, and as far as equitable distribution, we do have a funding formula that does take into account poverty. And the problem with it is, of course, is that you have to put enough money into it for it to work effectively.
Yes.
That's really the problem here. Sure, we'd like to, in addition to that, have enough money that we could reduce people's property taxes, but I don't think there's enough money in this budget. So realistically, $170 million, while it doesn't fully fund what we need to have in that equitable distribution formula, it at least helps. And so I think it's a pretty ingenious way of staying within the confines of the Constitution and restructuring the tax system and providing some more money to education, particularly in a bad fiscal and economic climate.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, former state lawmaker Rick Winkle. He's currently visiting senior fellow and adjunct professor in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. And on the phone with us this afternoon, Democratic State Senator Mike Frericks of Champaign. He represents the 52nd Senate District, which covers most of Champaign and Vermilion counties. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the highlights of the governor's address this afternoon, his Jobs Now program, which includes a third airport for the South Chicago suburbs. What are your thoughts, the two of you, on this jobs and infrastructure proposal?
Well, I like what I see coming to the University of Illinois through this. We have $60 million for a petascale computing facility, $57 million for renovation of Lincoln Hall, $44 million for new computer engineering facility, some money for capital renewal. So I think the University of Illinois does very well with this capital bill. There's still a lot of details about roads and bridges throughout my district that I'm looking forward to seeing, but I think this is a good start for my district.
Senator, did I hear you correctly? Did you say Lincoln Hall?
I did.
Excellent.
And actually, I think the big difference here is we now have a governor whom I trust to actually follow through with his commitment to me.
Excellent case in point right
you,
there.
That's, you had a different experience in your time in the Senate.
I did. And I think a capital bill is very important. As I understand it, the governor plans or is attempting to split it. There's a $26 billion proposal. He'd like to have $14 billion of it, if I'm correct, by April 3rd, which is pretty ambitious, but it would be certainly a welcome development. Of course, the way we pay for it is going to always be the thing that slows us up. And so I think that's where the negotiating has to be done, and that's where, you know, people are going to have to step up. I think we have a governor today in his speech, you know, regardless of our lack of detail that some are criticizing about, et cetera. He at least, you know, had the courage to step up and make a proposal. We'll see, you know, how many, you know, how much cover is needed for enough senators and enough representatives to step up and start moving this capital program along, because it will have to be paid for, and that's what's going to have to be negotiated out.
And let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line four. Hi.
Hello. I listened to the governor's speech this afternoon, and I just wanted to bring this up. When he talks about taxing businesses primarily, do not the businesses just roll that tax into the cost of their product and everybody ends up paying that tax?
Well, I don't think this governor today talked about taxing businesses primarily. I know the previous governor tried to say that the gross receipts tax was a tax on business, not on people. And I think the reason his gross receipts tax got so resoundingly defeated in the House when it was called for a vote is because people realized that businesses would pass those increased costs on to consumers, and it would ultimately be a tax on people.
And I think that's generally the case, that as you tax business, business then incorporates that cost in the price of what they sell, the services they deliver, and it's passed on to consumers to us. I think that's exactly right. One of the things that I'm a little concerned about with this proposal is we talk an awful lot about tax increases up front, and on one side, on the one hand, I would applaud the courage of bringing it forward, but on the other, I wonder how wise that is. I've listened to Governor Edgar over the years. The way he did it in a time of crisis was he talked about, and he wouldn't talk about tax increases, but he would talk about, you know, where do we cut in the budget, and talk about that first to make sure and convince everybody that we've done all that we can do in the budget as far as containing spending before we start talking about passing taxes on to the people. So that may be a philosophical difference that Republicans are going to bring forward, that they'd like to see where these cuts are coming from and have we done enough.
Yeah, I agree with Rick. I think that's why we started something in the Senate several weeks ago, a committee on reduction of the deficit, to start getting these ideas out there. And I know Governor Quinn said he's going to have a tax reform and renewal commission headed by Tom Johnson, a man I respect. I think is a good choice to lead this. Before we really start talking about the increased revenue, I think we need to convince the public that we really cut down to the bone.
I'm not entirely convinced that $11.5 billion over the 18-month period, fiscal year 09 and 10, I don't know how hard that number is. I mean, I'm sure it's a moving target, of course, but is it really 9? Is it 11.5? Was what we heard today, was that presentation enough to eliminate the structural deficit? If we're going to go through this pain, I think we need to make sure we're paying our bills on time, and also that the structural deficit is eliminated, spending's contained from here on forward, so we have a truly balanced budget. We all say, you know, the Constitution requires a balanced budget. Then we also, this in the next breath, we're talking about structural deficits. I've always found that odd, and it's a little disingenuous in the process. It's not, I'm not saying Senator Frags is your fault or anybody in particular. It's just, it's the way we've done it for so long that we've shuffled along this continuing structural deficit. Will this proposal, or what comes out of the General Assembly this session, will it eliminate the structural deficit, and will we pay our bills on time?
Well, I think under this proposal, he makes it very clear he wants to begin paying our bills on time, and that's one of the first things. If we're going to start to restore faith and trust of the public out there, we need to stop being a deadbeat, and we need to pay our bills within 30 days, and that will have positive ramifications throughout the state economy if we do that.
Yeah, and what's the outlook for pension reform?
Well, it's clear that the governor is committed to pension reform. For those listeners out there who are currently state employees or university employees, it shouldn't mean any difference to, actually it won't mean make any difference to their benefits. But for new hires, new people coming in, he's talking about increasing the retirement age. He's talking about some other reforms that he says, and I haven't had time to look at these numbers, will save over the next 40 years $160 billion. When you're looking at what's projected to be now a $70 billion unfunded liability in our pension system, I think that's something you have to look at for new hires.
And I was interested to hear that Senator Cullerton, the president of the Senate, actually, if I understood correctly, I think he was somewhat supportive of this proposal.
Yeah, I wasn't there at IGPA last week when he was in town, but that's what I heard.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take another couple of calls. Next we go to Clifton, line one. Hi.
A good topic. I guess a segue into my question about pensions. As a retiree, I'm concerned about my pension income and retirement income, and what effect this proposal is going to have on my income.
Well, I don't think if you're a retiree, this will neither change your benefits nor your taxation on those benefits.
And that's my understanding as well, nor if you're currently in the system as a current employee, it will not change. You have a vested interest. The second tier that the governor's talking about would be for new employees, new hires.
But, you know, this debt is so huge. What about the question of default? Could that happen?
Our pension system is backed by the full faith and credit of the state of Illinois. I think it's very difficult to default on it. These are obligations we are required to pay out if the pension system were to go broke, and I don't think we're in any danger of that right now. And if we do have reforms, I think we'll help solve some of that problem. But if it were to go broke, the taxpayers of the state would be on the hook, and you'd have to see new taxes to pay those obligations.
Yeah, that's not the danger. I agree with Senator Farrick's. The man from Clifton, I think your retirement is safe. And I think
as long as his retirement is through the state of Illinois.
Now, exactly.
If he has a pension through a company, he may have to be worried.
That's exactly right. So what Governor Quinn and what you and the legislature are going to be grappling with is the fiscal impact of it to eliminate the structural deficit to make sure we have a balanced budget. It's a fiscal crisis. But it's not a crisis of the state honoring its obligations to retirees.
Senator Farrick, you've been very generous with your time.
Thank you very
much. What does your watch say? Okay, you got to go.
My assistant is telling me time is now for me to go.
Okay.
But hopefully we'll have a chance to talk more later. Over the next couple of months, I know there'll be lots of negotiations, so I'm sure the final product will be different. And I'm happy to hear from my constituents about what they think about the governor's proposal.
Okay, we will do it.
Thank you both, and it's a pleasure being on this panel with former Senator Winkle. If there are more questions about education funding, you've got a great person on the line to deal with this. He was a big fighter for education funding reform in his time in the Senate.
Okay. Thanks, Senator.
Senator Mike Farrick of Champaign. Let's take another call, a listener in Champaign, line one. Good afternoon.
Is that me?
Yep, that's you.
Okay. I have nothing to say about the governor's speech. I just want to ask a question about the taxation. From time to time, you hear all these anxieties and discussions about taxation being increased versus cutting spending, et cetera. I haven't any memory for ever hearing anybody talk about, well, if we have a tax increase, let's sunset it. Let's write it so that this will only last for 3 years, and then it goes back to the old setup. Because, you know, by the time the economy turns around and the taxes start rolling in, then all the people in Springfield totally fail to ever.
Oops, we lost the caller. Well, Jim Edgar, when he was governor, that proposal was to sunset it, but we never got out of the hole, so to speak, and he campaigned for extending it and making it permanent.
Yeah, the state income tax was 2.5%, and then there was a temporary state income tax increase of 0.5%, bringing it to 3. And you're exactly right, and eventually that was made permanent. And you still hear people joke from time to time about. I know the caller was serious, and it's a serious proposal, and it may well happen. But none of us have really ever heard of something that's truly temporary when it comes to taxation. It oftentimes becomes permanent.
Yeah. And let's see. We're working on getting another legislator to speak with us this afternoon. In the meantime, we've been talking a little bit about education, and we have some reaction from a spokesman for the University of Illinois. The governor's proposal includes a $40 million increase for public colleges and universities. The U of I would receive about 2.6% more than in the 2009 budget, with Eastern Illinois University seeing its funding go up by nearly 7%. U of I spokesman Tom Hardy is cautiously optimistic after several years of nearly flat funding.
You've probably heard what's going on in the.
And we'll try and get that to you in a moment. Naomi Jacobson, we hope to get her on the phone with us this afternoon, but she is tied up at the moment. And let me give my technical director what's the story? Do we have Mr. Hardy's comments now? Okay, here we go.
Well, I think on first glance, it's a very impressive budget for public higher education and for the University of Illinois in particular. Of course, there's a lot of work to be done yet in Springfield between now and the end of May, sometime early in June, when the governor and the legislature finally work out a budget. But when you look at what has been proposed here, we see an increase in operating appropriation for the university that basically makes us whole on the 2.5% cut that we received for this current fiscal year and then adds another 1% on top of that. Now, you know, 1%, somebody might suggest, you know, could be better, but given this economy and given the circumstances and given past cuts that we've received, we're very appreciative of this increase in our operating appropriation, which is what supports our core education mission.
And, of course, the University of Illinois also represented in the governor's capital development proposal. And Rick Winkle mentioned one of the big tickets here is a long-awaited renovation remodeling for Lincoln Hall. The governor's proposal includes $57.3 million for that.
That's great news. When I was an undergrad student here in the 1970s, it needed to be renovated. It's a top priority, and I'm so glad to see it in the budget.
Also, $44.5 million for a new computer and engineering facility at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
This is really good news that the governor is giving higher education obviously holds it in high regard. And when you also consider that, let's say, the rate of inflation for this year is going to be 0.1%, I mean, essentially the economy's flat. It kind of puts it all in perspective. Things are very slow. We're in a very bad fiscal situation, yet we're getting an increase in higher education, for which I think we should be very appreciative.
Yeah. One of the things we've been talking about this afternoon is budget cuts. And on the governor's website, it says Governor Quinn's budget plan contains $1.3 billion in cuts. Were you surprised then not to hear him talk about that in the budget address this afternoon?
He talked about areas, about grants being cut 2%, some other things that obviously, but in a little detail. And I think that's what some of the criticism we're starting to hear about the budget address is that there was that lack of detail. That's the sort of thing, if this is going to have bipartisan support, is going to have to be fleshed out and negotiated and made very plain. That an effort, a very good faith effort, has been made to trim the budget in a fair way that addresses the problem before we start talking about increasing taxes. And so that's a crucial element that the governor is going to have to make the case. And I think he's got the ability. That's the thing about Pat Quinn. I mean, he's good at going on the stump. He's good at campaigns, and he's good at communicating. And I think people recognize he's an honest guy. He speaks from the heart, and I think he's got the power to persuade. But I got to tell you, he's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. And what about the 2010 election? What role is that going to play in the mix?
Well, see, that's part of the thing about this, is that it is courageous for a new governor under these circumstances and in these times who maybe – and I'm sure he does, wants to run in 2010, mm-hmm. To take this step and to confront this head on, I think is a courageous thing. It may be the sort of thing that we talk about in years hence that Governor Ogilvie did when he brought on the income tax, which was necessary at the time. At that time, we had a fiscal problem, and that was the answer to it at that time. But then he wasn't elected again. He didn't get a second term. We have to wait to see if this turns into be an albatross for Governor Quinn. I don't know. It depends on how the next few weeks work out, whether he can work together and form a bipartisan coalition. But that's a tall order.
Yeah. And what are the opportunities and the dangers for the GOP here?
Well, you know, the danger, I suppose, is, and I think that's what Governor Quinn was getting at, and not just the GOP, but anybody that might be opposed to this, that, you know, if you just go about it and just say, look, we're going to cut,
No.
You know, and being mean-spirited about it in the sense of lack of sensitivity about the programs or people you're impacting, that's obviously not going to help whoever's doing that. Now, I got to tell you, on the other hand, Governor Edgar, who has still very high numbers, popularity, he's respected, well-regarded. He was also known at the time in the early 90s when he had a tough budget situation. He was known as Governor No. And he, you know, obviously, why? Because he would tell people no. You know, we cannot increase spending. We cannot, you know, expand it or create a new program. That's what's come home to roost in the last few years. We've had a structural deficit, and yet with a declining economy and numbers going down, we've created new programs and spent more, and it's come home to roost. And Governor Quinn, he didn't do this, but he is confronting it. But he's got a tough job ahead of him.
Yeah, okay. There we've got to leave it. No doubt we'll revisit this. It's a long way to the end of May. isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. It sure is. And I would think that every one of them want to get out on time, but they have a tough job doing that.
Okay. My thanks this afternoon to our callers and to Rick Winkle, former state lawmaker, who joined me in the studio here this afternoon, currently visiting senior fellow and adjunct professor in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. And our thanks as well to Democratic State Senator Mike Frerichs of Champaign, who was on the phone with us earlier this afternoon.